Welcome to the Chronicles of Us podcast. Wherever you are in your personal or professional journey, this podcast is a means to inspire you and give you some insights on what it can mean to achieve personal success. Follow us on Instagram. Just look us up at chroniclesofus.with.nags. You'll find there behind-the-scenes content, teasers, and more information on our upcoming guests. Welcome to a new episode of Chronicles of Us. For those who have been following me, you probably know that I have been living in the Netherlands for about 20 years now. But one of the things that really continued to make me really fall in love with this country was the openness and the tolerance of its culture. But as I learned to speak and understand Dutch, and I started getting more, paying attention to the news and what was happening here, I really noticed that, like every other country, there is still racism, sexism, homophobia, and other forms of discrimination. And like most of also other Western countries, in the past few years, there's been a lot more attention and action speaking about these issues on discriminations of all forms. And so as I started paying more attention to that, I came across my guest of today, Audrey Bron, who has spent much of the last, I think, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, 20 years of your life really focused on diversity and inclusion and raising awareness and empowering change in that space. So welcome to the podcast, Audrey, and I'm super excited to have you with me today.
Thank you. I do have to make a correction there, but as we go through our conversation, I will explain further. So I haven't been working in diversity and inclusion for 20 years. I started the study Management of Cultural Diversity in 2017. And that's when I really started investing my work and time in diversity and inclusion. And prior to that time, I've been working in international organizations as well. Via my studies going abroad, which raised my awareness of cultural diversity. But cultural diversity or the interest in diversity is something that started really young for me. So that's even more than 20 years, but really doing the work that started with my study, actually.
Yeah.
And then really working for an organization doing the work that started like about 2 years ago. So calling myself a diversity, equity, and inclusion and global communication expert started like that while ago. So for everyone who's listening, it's not that I'm working in the field of diversity and inclusion for 20 years, because that's really long. But I have always been interested in the topic, especially in the topic of diversity, people, other people's backgrounds. Started at a really young age.
So tell us a bit more about how it started. You said so from a very young age. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, I will. I had an aunt. She's white, so it's not related by blood, but through friendship of my father, who would always come to visit us. And she would then bring books for me. And those books were stories about people living in other countries. People living in South America, in the continent of South Africa, of South America, in the continent of Africa, Asia. So she would bring books. And it was from the moment that I could start reading properly, or even a bit later, I believe. And that triggered my interest, but you also notice it on the programs that I would watch on television. I love to watch BBC. I love to watch Discovery Channel, National Geographic, because it brought those stories closer to me that I would never had the opportunity to meet because we weren't traveling in my family, going to other countries. So everything that I learned from other cultures came from books and came from documentaries, series, etc. And when I started working eventually, and when I started studying further, because I also studied international business and languages, I came into contact with more diversity, diverse backgrounds, people of diverse backgrounds, different languages. So that's where my contact started, like really young. And the contact would have already been there because I was born in Suriname. And I've been living in the Netherlands for now for 34, 35 years. Because we came to the Netherlands because of the inland wars. So we came to the Netherlands because of the inland wars in Suriname. Which also gives you then the opportunity to learn about another culture. But if I would have been living in Suriname, I would, by default, been in contact with various other cultures because it's a multicultural country, but also intercultural because you have people of various backgrounds living clustered with their own community. And then you have, for example, if you go to the capital, Paramaribo, you have, it becomes more also intercultural because you have various backgrounds, people with various backgrounds living together, like you would have perhaps also here in the Netherlands if you go to bigger cities or in other countries.
Yeah.
So, but it started
how,
really
how
young.
How was your transition to the Netherlands at that point? Was it a smooth transition, or did you, was there any realization or events that marked you that in a positive or a negative way?
If I would have to think about a transition, there was a transition. I was really young, so I do not remember everything. At the time, I was 5 going to 6 years of age. There are certain things that I recall because before coming to the Netherlands, we fled to La Guyane, French Guyana, mm-hmm. which is yeah. a neighboring country of Suriname. And we lived there for a couple of months with my mom's older sister. And from there, we came to the Netherlands through WST, which is Welzijnstichting Surinamers Tilburg. And it's a not-for-profit organization that helps Surinamese people who live in Tilburg. So they arrange our ticket and everything to come to the Netherlands. And when we came to the Netherlands, there was no space in the asylum center that we were supposed to stay. So we stayed with an aunt, which helped because then you come to live with family. And they know the country better, so they can help you even better for the transition. For me, as a child itself and looking as an individual, it was a challenge. For me, it was a challenge because in Suriname was colonized by the Netherlands. It's now Republican, it's no longer a colonized country. But there you have the formal language is Dutch. But so many people have been imported, because that's what I call it. They have been imported, often not by choice, for example, through slavery, because that is my background. My ancestors have been enslaved people who were imported to Suriname. But anyway, to come back to the transition. So when we came to the Netherlands, I had a challenge with the language, because in Suriname, the formal language is Dutch, but then you also have the lingua franca, which is informal, which is Sranantongo, which is a mix of various languages with a basis, I believe, also with African languages,
mm-hmm.
a Dutch, French, Portuguese, English. So it's like a really a melting language of various other languages. And then you have the people coming from other countries, like, for example, people who are imported from Indonesia, they speak Malay. You have people who came from India, who now speak Sarnami, which is also Surinamese. It's no longer the same language as they would speak in India. They might understand each other in various ways if they go to India, I believe. I'm not sure. But you have various languages there. But anyways, when I came to the Netherlands, I had to learn Dutch because my native language is Okanishi Tongo. And I did not speak Dutch. So my transition didn't go that well because I couldn't speak the language that well. Perhaps there was also a bit of trauma in me that I'm not aware of this day. But going to school was a challenge because I would sit and I would then be staring outside of the window at certain moments because I didn't understand what they were saying. Mm-hmm. My mom was advised by the school that I should no longer speak Okanishi Tongo at home, but I should speak Dutch. So I had to speak Dutch, and my mom would then, she would speak Okanishi Tongo with us, but we couldn't reply in Okanishi Tongo. We had to reply in Dutch. And also at a certain point, I had to do the classes over because I wasn't up to level. With the educational system. So the transition didn't go that well when it comes to school. Family-wise, etc., I believe it went well, but it was a challenge for me in school anyways.
So that all kind of predisposed you to being interested in that area of inclusivity. And has there been another event or another person or something that really pushed you, to do these studies that you did, where you really now focus a lot more on this area?
I think many things came from myself and my interest. The thing is, at a certain point when we in the Netherlands, the educational system is set up that you, from primary school, from the moment that you leave primary school, you, in the last class of primary school, you have to do a test, which they call the CITO-TOETS. And the CITO-TOETS, is a deciding factor, on your intelligence level. So it's a deciding factor on your intelligence level and what type of follow-up education you will be doing after that.
Yeah.
So my level wasn't that high that I got from my CITO score. So I had to start really low and I had to staple my studies. The thing is that I was really motivated to study because I do like studying. But I do have various challenges. I've never tested myself, but I also believe that I have dyslexia.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be because of the challenges that I had in primary school that I had to keep up and I couldn't keep up. And your brain is then rushing to keep up. Which is causing you to not to see particular things. So I already had the motivation to study, but my mom for sure played a role. I have various people who played a role in me proceeding with studying. So my mom was one of them. My mom never had the opportunity to study. Yeah. So one thing she would always say is, if you can, do it, because I never really had the opportunity. And if I had the opportunity now, I would have studied. I would have done things differently than I had in my own youth, is a thing that my mom often says. My mom used to work in shifts in production, doing production work, but also doing cleaning jobs. And she would then come from work because I would study when it was really late at night, because then the world is silent. And when the world is silent, I study better. because I can focus better. So I often study when it's really late. And my mom would then come from work and she would then come sit at the table with me while I was studying and just watch me study. So that was, of course, motivating, like seeing her and
interested
and being interested and supporting me in the way she knew best, because and for her it's just being there physically with me. And then later on I also had teachers who were interested in helping me develop myself further. I had lecturers when I went to the university who were interested in helping me develop myself further. Other people in my environment, my siblings, who always pushed me, motivated me, inspired me with the things that they did to develop myself further. Coming in the field of diversity and inclusion was not my first thought. When I started studying, I'm really a rational person, logical, simple thinking in some ways. And when I started studying at mid-vocational level, I thought to myself, I have to study something that my siblings aren't studying. Because if I study something completely different, I will be able to help them in another way. So I had one sibling who was studying in construction. I had one sibling who was studying in the field of going towards the beauty industry. I had one sibling who was studying in the field of healthcare. And then I thought I then have to study in the field of administration.
Right.
Because then all four of us are studying something completely different and we will be able to help each other. So that
did it work?
Well, it did. It's the foundation of the things that I'm doing right now. It also helped me to develop myself in another way. But later on, as I started working after doing my study in the field of administration, I didn't like the work. I found it really boring. And I thought, but this is not what I want to do. I want to do something that gives me the opportunity to meet people with a different background. Because I was working in a Dutch organization, there was not much diversity there.
Yeah.
So then I started doing the study International Business and Languages. And when I did that study, I felt so happy because I then went to, in Holland, University of Applied Sciences.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard so many different languages of people who came to the Netherlands to study here, and I felt home. I saw so many different people with different cultures and I loved it. I also got the opportunity to do a study exchange abroad to Portugal, meeting other people, new people, different backgrounds. I loved it. I got the opportunity to do an internship abroad. These things were the things that were giving me energy. Meeting new people, hearing their stories, sharing our stories, because they share their stories with me, I share my stories with them, going to new places. So when I started working after my higher vocational study, I worked in mostly Dutch companies. But at a certain point, I thought, okay, there was redundancy, etc. So I had to leave the organization. But when I had the opportunity to apply for a new job because of the redundancy, but also other things that happened at that time, I decided that I wanted to work for an international company. It had to be an international company, a multinational, because that would give me the opportunity to meet people with various backgrounds, work with those people, get to know their way of thinking, their way of problem solving, etc. And I flourished. And while I was working with that multinational organization, I came to the discovery. I didn't come to the discovery because it's something that I always wanted to do. I wanted to do a university degree, a university education. So I checked, I looked on the website of Tilburg University, what studies they had. Because in the first instance, I thought I wanted to do something in marketing. And then I saw management of cultural diversity was one of the studies that they had. And I said, this is the study that I have to do. This is the study that will help me to develop myself even further. And it will be in my line of interest, in the thing that I have to do. I believe that this will help me with my higher purpose in life.
Yeah.
So that was 2017. I started to do the study, Management of Cultural Diversity. And while I was doing that study, I thought that I needed more depth to the knowledge that I needed to do my work. So I simultaneously started also doing the study global communication. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things that I always say is communication is everything. And everything is communication. It is what you said, what you didn't say. It's your body language. It's everything. It's what is written outside, what is written on the wall, what is happening in spaces that we come into. It's what's happening with people that we meet. Communication is everything. And one of the things that I also believe within, when I talk about diversity and inclusion and why I'm doing this, and what I've noticed while doing my work in diversity and inclusion is also that intent influences impact. But intent will only influence impact if you communicate, which brings me then back to communication is everything and everything is communication. But I see that I'm also trailing off.
I love it. No, question. I love it. I am so in awe. First of all, I think like everything you said, I kind of completely like take in, because it is very similar to my personal journey as well. And it wasn't business administration, the study I chose to do. It was international and European law, but it was also this passion for diversity, and especially cultural diversity, and that innate curiosity that I had to get to know other people and get out of this bubble, because we all live somewhat in a bubble, you know, and the day-to-day life brings us there and you get stuck. And then before you know it, you forget to look outside of that bubble and be curious. And I am a really big fan of curiosity, and I like to challenge myself and get out of my bubble as well. So no, and communication. Well, the listeners that are following me on Instagram or supporting me on Patreon, I work in communications as well. This is the career that I've chosen, and it kind of came about, but I see so many things that you said that actually have been true in my life that probably led me to choose communications, and that kind of really made me really realize exactly what you said. Everything is communication. And I personally think that most of the time, the people that argue, the people that are fighting with each other, or that are enemies or don't get along, are people that haven't properly sat down and communicated and talked to each other, because this humanity binds us a lot more than all the disagreements. And it's more about what hasn't been said, what has been said, and what your experience has been, and whether it's your experience in your life or your experience with others in your life. Exactly. So,
yes.
Yeah, but absolutely.
But one important thing in communication is listening.
Yeah.
Listening to other people to understand, why are they saying this? Why aren't they saying that? What you needed, and asking the right questions. Always ask questions. Be curious. What is going on? Why is it happening? What could we do different? What can I take away from what that other person is doing? So the communication, when we talk about communication, people will tend to follow the line of what is coming out of your mouth.
Yeah, the words written or said.
The words written or said. but it's also about reception and the person analyzing the message that you're bringing. And listening is really important in communication.
Yeah. As you work in the diversity and inclusion space, in general, I always feel like there's this perception that people that work in that space are courageous, you know, to be working in a space that to a lot of other people seems very difficult or intricate, complicated, and very sensitive areas of topics or conversation. How what's your point of view around that and your experience? Does it take courage to work in and do strides in diversity and inclusion?
It does. It does, because you will have people who do not agree with the work that you're doing. Mm-hmm. And that's challenging. There are people who do not believe in a world that is in a world of equity, of inclusion, the diversity should mingle in order for this world to become better than it was today, and for sure better than it was yesterday. And that it will be even better tomorrow because of the work that we're doing. It asks of you to be courageous, because you will be taken out of your comfort zone. You will be forcing yourself to come out of your comfort zone. And I haven't always been courageous in my life, because it's scary. It's scary seeing the things that you see that are truths, things out of history, things that happened in the past that made the world the way it is today. And talking about it, you will have people that want to react aggressive, or do not want to listen to you at all, do not want to give you space, do not want to give you the mic, do not want to give you an opportunity, because you saying what is happening, what has happened, and what has created the world, because the world that we're living in today has been created for us. And we're trying to change it, because we are now in a place where we can change it. We cannot change it by ourselves. We have to change it together. Alone, you can make particular steps, small steps, but perhaps not enough. But together we can make big steps. But there are people who believe in oppression, who benefit from oppression. Mm. And you have to be courageous to speak out and to speak up and against everything that is oppressing, everything that has been built for us, that is not good for us, to change it. It asks of you to be courageous, because as human, we have the innate feeling of belonging somewhere. And when you speak up about particular things, there is a chance that your in-group will no longer accept you for who you are, for what you're saying, for what you're doing. For example, if I talk as a woman about how I feel as a woman, for example, to a man, it can be that man doesn't accept it. Or another woman who believes in patriarchy doesn't accept it. If I speak to particular groups, for example, if you're in school, you're educating yourself and you're going in school, you have an entire group of students, teachers, etc. You're in a space where you want to belong. You want to belong because you want knowledge. But at the moment that you speak up about things from the past, unjust behavior, etc., it might not be accepted. So that group might push you out. And it's scary. And still you have to proceed. An example is Jane Elliott. Jane Elliott is the lady who has the experiment about blue-eyed, brown-eyed. In her experiment, she shows what it feels like to be excluded. She shows what it feels like to be oppressed. And when she started doing this work, and I'm talking of her as an ally because she's a white woman, when she started doing that work, she got ostracized. And that's a scary thing. No longer belonging in the group of people where you thought you belonged.
You belonged, yeah.
Yes. But also you have women, for example, Black women who spoke out about injustice. When we look back in the past, when you had the feminist movement of white women, and now I cannot come up with a name so to tell you, but who spoke up about the oppression of women. And when they said, but we as Black women, it was for the voting rights, I believe, we as Black women need to be taken in the group as well. And the white women said, no. Why not? Should you then think as a Black woman? And it was because of the color of the skin. So then you're no longer perceived in that case as a woman, because the white women believe that you do not belong in that space. They do want your allyship, but they do not want you to be seen. That's something that will not work. So it asks of you to be courageous when you work in that field. If you're from the LGBTQI community, for example, which I'm not, I'm cisgender woman. If you work in that field, I'm a cisgender heterosexual woman. But if you, for example, work in that field and you're from the LGBTQI community and you speak up, you might be ostracized also. People perceive you differently. If I speak up as a Black woman in certain communities about unjust behavior of other people, for example, of men, I will be treated differently. So it asks of you to be brave and courageous.
Yeah. How have you been able to do that, to find that courage? I mean, sometimes there must have been situations where you were struggling, particularly, hopefully not, but maybe there were. And how did you find the courage to keep going? I mean, it's been a few years now, and it's definitely got more attention, more coverage, and more heated topics and discussions. Has there been a moment where you thought, I can't do this anymore? The reality is too harsh. People are too mean and ill-intentioned. And how have you been managing that personally?
Well, there have been moments that I found it really scary, and I could feel my heart beat in my throat. Like, this is so scary, but I'm going to say something about it. And I just went ahead and said something about how I felt, how I saw things. It's a scary thing. But the thing is that you then just have to do it. There is a risk, but there is also a chance that there is someone in that same space that has heard your message and that agrees with you. And that person, perhaps at the time that you say something, will not open their mouths to say, yes, I agree with what Audrey said. But later on comes to you and says, what you just did, I found it so inspiring. I found it so courageous or brave, what you just did. And it motivates me to also make a difference. It's other people that confirm what you're doing, your behavior, whether it's good, whether it's not. But also other people who support you. The support that you have from people is what helps you to be courageous. I remember we once had a conversation, and in the Netherlands we have they celebrate Sinterklaas, and Sinterklaas is a sidekick, and the sidekick is Zwarte Piet. And Zwarte Piet is blackface. And Zwarte Piet is always portrayed as someone who's really stupid. And Zwarte Piet is something that is that is taken from the colonized period into modern times, which people use still to hurt Black people, because it portrays Black people as dumb, clumsy, etc., you name it. It also portrays Black people as aggressors, as the boogie man or boogie woman, the boogie yeah. person who's going to hurt you, because it's actually, what's the right word to use for this? It's a pedagogical tool. I'm not sure if that's the right word to use, if that's that word exists in English in the way that I say it. It's a tool that was used to raise their children, because it was then said, if you have been good, when Santa Claus comes, Sinterklaas comes, if you yeah. have been good, you will get sweets and you will get a gift. If you have been naughty, Black Pete will put you in a bag on a ship yeah. and will bring you to Spain.
Yeah.
The most scary thing that children have is to be taken away from the people that they love.
Of course. Yeah.
So it was yep. used as a tool. The Black person was used as a tool for them to straighten up their children.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that's not a positive...
To raise their children. So their children then perceive Black people as such bad
yes.
people.
Yeah, yeah.
So we had a conversation and they asked me what I think about that. It was during one of the lectures. They asked me about that. They didn't ask me particularly. It was just asked randomly. Does anyone mm-hmm. want to talk about this topic? So I was the only person of color who stood up and said something about it, that I believe that it's not okay.
Yeah.
And that other students who disagreed with me, white students, and said, yes, but it's part of our culture. And I had to explain to them that that is not part of your culture, because culture changes. And when you see that something is not right, something is not good, something is injustice, and something is hurting another group,
yeah.
you need to change that culture, because culture is not a static thing.
Yeah, it evolves through the years and the ages.
Culture is dynamic. The fact that I'm speaking through you, to you, online right now, is change of culture. The fact yeah. the way that we are dressed is culture. The way we eat, etc. Everything is culture, and that culture evolves. It changes.
Mm-hmm.
It all changes. So you can change one thing to create justice and change the narrative that was into something that is positive. And saying particular things in an entire group of people who are not speaking up, that believe the same that you do, and people who are speaking up who are against you, is scary.
It's a very lonely place to be.
It's yeah. lonely, and it asks courage of you, because me saying that at that moment could mean that I'm from that moment ostracized, working in project groups, etc. If I had mean students, it would have been really difficult, but luckily I didn't. It was a safe, yeah. I felt safe to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
Do I feel safe enough here to speak what I feel?
Yeah. Do you have any tips, or not tips, like advice? For people who sometimes want to speak up and are just a little bit maybe intimidated by and afraid of potential repercussions of what they would say. So, you know, and it can be really anyone at this point. But I think a lot of people in audiences of whatever event it is, or anything, or company discussions, groups, dinners, whatever it is, that fear of being judged, and that fear of standing out, and disagreement actually, and aggression is real. And how do you have any advice on how to overcome this? What has worked for you?
The thing that has worked for me is that I discuss it with other people. Firstly, what do you think about a particular topic? Yeah. Speaking about the topic of Zwarte Piet, I discussed it with an older colleague at work prior to discussing it, for example, in the lecture room, because I wanted to understand him. And that's, again, communication is everything, and everything is communication. How do you say it? How do you defend what you are saying? Because when you say something that people do not agree with you, you are sometimes moved in a position of wanting to defend, but you do not always have to defend. Just bringing out the message can be enough. because then a seed has been planted. But I discussed it in that case with a colleague, an older colleague, he's over 60 now. And I asked him, what do you think about the topic? Can you tell me your first experience when you were a small child, when Black Pete was still portrayed it as, because now they portrayed it as a friend.
Yeah, a fun character,
but it's still demeaning, but still inferior to the white person.
Yeah.
But anyways, I asked him, 60 years ago, when you were introduced as a child to Black Pete, how did this feel for you? And he said, I had never seen a Black person before. And I was so scared. I had never been so scared in my life at that age. Because I knew I had been naughty. Children are naughty by nature. Because they're still, the world is so big, so adventurous. They're experimenting with life and so many things to happen. They will do things that parents perceive as being naughty because it's the parents that decide that it's naughty. It's not the child that decide that what has been done is not good or okay. It's the parent that says, because they are forming that child to become part of society.
Yeah. Imposing their own rules and visions of the world a lot of the time. Formatting them, I like to say.
Exactly. Yeah. And how it should be. So if you haven't been eating your vegetables, you've been naughty. If you have jumped from the chair, you've been naughty. Yeah. While you've been trying to figure out your boundaries, tasting new food, etc., things that you don't like, name it. Parents say this is healthy, you don't find it healthy because you're still in that period of your life where everything is new. So I always say children are naughty by nature.
Yeah.
Because they are
experimenting with
the world. They're discovering life. But he told me he was scared. He was so frightened. He had never seen a Black person before. This was the first person, and that person was just makeup. It wasn't real because it was a white person putting on a Black face. And he said, I was so scared. I didn't know what to do. I didn't like it. I didn't like it because I had been naughty. So when I had that conversation, I used that example of him. And I also explained to my fellow students that using Black Pete as the sidekick of Sinterklaas, because the celebration isn't called Sinterklaas. It isn't called Black Pete, Zwarte Piet. It's called Sinterklaas Feest.
So why he's also on a horse, right?
Yes, so
he's
on also a horse. So why is everything? Everything is evolved around Black Pete being the naughty. Why isn't Sinterklaas being the naughty one? Not the naughty one, but why isn't Sinterklaas being the one who is the boogie person, the bad person who's going to put you in the bag and take you with him? Why does it have to be a Black person?
Yeah.
Position.
A lot of the fairy tales and a lot of the children's stories that we kind of inherited from the past have actually these type of
stereotypes.
Where you can talk about women and men, you can talk about color of the skin, you can talk about a lot, but a lot of these are actually really completely the opposite of the culture we're trying to build today, which is a more inclusive and equal culture. But somehow with you know, the movies and the reworking of these fairy tales, we forget that. And recently there's also been a lot of talk about this and how some of those should really just disappear. They are not okay anymore and they should not be told to the new generation of children. And I was very interested at that point as well. I have kids. So it was very interesting to me how even myself growing up from a completely different culture, those fairy tales still reached me. Mm-hmm. And those, kind of started structuring my thinking pattern and how I saw the world and people in it. So that is really that is absolutely true and across the board.
But to answer your question, so how do you become courageous? Some people are born courageous, others are not. Make sure that you are informed about the topic that you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Having knowledge gives you courage, because then you know what you're talking about. You're seeing it with
informed eyes.
With informed eyes, but also with a security in yourself. Mm-hmm. Self-secure that what I'm saying here right now, I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But also when it comes to your feeling, you know how you feel. When we talk out of emotion, you know how you feel. You're talking out of your emotion. You know what you're talking about. You know what you're feeling.
Well, yes, but then again, I can get discriminated or ignored because I come across as an emotional woman. You know, let's not go there. Because
yes, sometimes but it depends how you communicate your emotions.
Exactly. Yeah.
Can I communicate my emotion in a calm manner? Yeah. I'm still communicating my emotions.
Yeah.
But without the emotion. By distancing my emotion, my mom always said, when you feel in a particular way, you don't always have to show people that you feel in that way. The day that you show the lion is the day that they have to become scared. The day that you show the roar of the lion, because then you had it and it's been enough. But before that time, try to communicate it in a calm manner. What's going on here? I don't like what's happening and you should stop.
That is pure wisdom. That is pure wisdom. I'm gonna do that. Yes. I'm gonna write it down.
So be informed. Make sure that you're informed about the topic that you're talking about. It will give you courage because you know what you're talking about. People take more information from you because you know what you're talking about. Make sure that you have, if necessary, you have people who stand behind you, who believe in you, who support you. But the biggest thing, the scariest thing that you have to do is just take the leap. Just take the leap and say how you feel and what you think. You can always come back on how you feel and what you think if you've gained more knowledge. But if you feel that this is the time that I need to be courageous and say what I have on my mind, what I'm feeling, what I'm seeing that is unjust, do it. Your heart will beat in your throat. You will feel it. But once you've said it, it will calm down.
That brings me to another question I wanted to ask you. The moment that some people have D&I in their titles, so to speak, somehow gives really that feeling of expertise, and every word that you say is the real truth, ominous truth for everyone, universal truth kind of thing. How do you see, in light of what you just said now about keep learning, keep listening, keep getting information and knowledge around topics, how do you feel yourself you've been able to become an expert?
You know what it is? I call myself an expert. I know that many people do not like to use the word expert, or some people do not like to use the word expert. But I use that word because that's my stick behind the door, that I have to keep developing myself. I have to keep educating myself. If not, I cannot call myself an expert. Calling yourself an expert for me doesn't mean that you're done. You're never done. I do not know, I do not have all the knowledge of the world in me. Mm-hmm. But I do call myself an expert because I keep developing myself. I keep gaining new knowledge. And when I get new knowledge, I might change my way of thinking because I don't know what I know right now. But calling myself an expert is actually telling you that I will keep developing myself for myself and for any other person I come into contact with. And for anyone that I have to transfer knowledge to, I have to keep developing myself. That's why I call myself an expert.
I love that. I absolutely love that. It really changed the meaning that I had of expertise right now. So thank you for that. How is your work helping you to continue to develop yourself? So you're working for a Dutch anti-discrimination agency and you're also freelancing. How are you able to cope with the amount of knowledge that you have to absorb in that space? Because I can imagine it's really, there's so much to to change, to research, to talk about?
There is so much, there is too much, there is overwhelming, a lot of information. Yeah. It's overwhelming. You can only do that much. The thing is, working at RADA, for example, gives, because it's an anti-discrimination organization, it gives me the opportunity to come into contact with people who think for sure differently about various topics, who will disagree, who might respond in an aggressive manner. And aggressive, when I say aggressive, I'm not per se talking about being physically aggressive, but verbally aggressive, nonverbal aggression. I meet those people. And for me, it's good because it's also part of my development.
Mm-hmm.
When you come into contact with other people, it changes you. It changes you as a person. It helps to develop you even further from where you were. It helps you to gain wisdom, because these are two things that I see separate from each other. It makes you wiser.
Yeah.
Because you put certain things into practice. And you learn what is working and what is not working. Also, the experience that I have at working at RADAR is one that helps me to use my, if I can call it, creativity even more. Because I get the opportunity to produce trainings, but I also do them in my freelance work, but also there. It gives me the opportunity, working at RADAR gives me the opportunity, and I don't say that I have to. I always name it as an opportunity. It gives, yeah. Because at RADAR, I also conduct research. So it gives me the opportunity to get to know things that I didn't know yet,
yeah.
Or to confirm what I already knew even more as a researcher. As doing the trainings there gives me the opportunity to develop myself even further while giving trainings, but also that creativity in producing new trainings, coming up with new activities or changing existing activities in such a way that people will understand it even better, how yeah. they can change, giving them tools, how they can change in becoming more a more equitable person, how to embrace diversity, how to fight against racism, how to be an anti-racist.
Yeah.
It gives me so much that is so valuable, and it brings me also back to being an expert. Because of being there, I get the opportunity to improve my expertise. Also, expertise is not something static. Everything in life is dynamic. There is no such thing as static. Things change through time. And being yeah. there gives me the opportunity to become an even better expert. Also in my freelance work, to become an even better expert. I see new things. I hear new things. But I also get to see myself, a mirror of myself. The work that I'm doing, the reason why I'm doing it is because it's my compass
mm-hmm.
of the person that I want to be. The person that I am and the person that I want to be. Because I keep changing. As long as I breathe, I keep changing. I keep developing. And doing this work helps me to create a more just world, but also to stay, to be a just person.
And hopefully make more impact around you whenever you can.
You always, as a human being, you always make impact with the things that you do, knowingly yeah. or unknowingly. That impact can be negative and that impact can be positive. So when you speak about impact, what I hope that I give people is a positive impact.
Yeah. Thank you.
And the tools that they need to do their part in this world.
So I have a few questions for you. I always end the interview with a few gut questions. So, and they're somewhat related to what we spoke about, but I'd love to have your spontaneous answers on these. So are you ready for those?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I like to, especially for you, I'm going to ask this one. I like to ask what advice you've received in your past, in your life, that you realized after taking it, it was complete rubbish and completely wrong.
An advice that was completely rubbish and completely wrong. I don't know. I think there is wisdom in everything. Sometimes you don't see it immediately, because something that can sound as completely rubbish, and I will say today that it's rubbish, I might experience something today which will refute, or how do you say it? And it's no longer rubbish, but just because I haven't experienced it yet.
Yeah. So maybe tomorrow it will be great advice, but you didn't understand it the right way at first.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Nice one. So you said you're curious. Is there a specific topic you're diving into today and or to this month and that you're exploring that curiosity?
There are many topics. One of the topics that I speak about is one of the topics that I'm always curious about is also emotion. You have emotional literacy. It's something that will always interest me. So that's something that I'm diving into more. I keep diving in all the topics that I'm working on right now, because there is so much knowledge and bringing it back to you. Again, what I said earlier, things that we do not know.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden someone tells you something, you have an aha moment. I didn't know this. And now I know and I want to know more. But emotional literacy is really interesting for me. The topics that I discuss are allyship, inclusive communication, also social mobility, which is linked to my own background that I found really interesting. But emotional literacy is so important, because we as human beings, emotions are the things that also form us, the way we respond to other people, the way we feel. Something that might be funny to me might not be funny for someone else. Someone said something and I felt agitated. Why am I feeling this way? So always investigating myself, analyzing myself, bringing it also back to communication is everything, and everything is communication. Why do I feel this way when this person said this? How am I going to tell this person that I felt this way? Emotional literacy. I think it's something that we can invest more in. We also talk about emotional intelligence. So how do you bring it? But understanding the emotions itself and speaking them are things that we need to learn, I believe.
So that ties in perfectly with the next question I had for you, actually. How does humor fit in your mind in the D&I space? I find that personally a very difficult thing, but I'd love your point of view.
Humor is culturally, is cultural. And then from cultural, it goes to subculture. What you find funny in your family might not be funny in the rest of the culture, might not be funny in the rest of the world. So that's something you have to be really careful about.
Yeah.
Humor is something that you can use with people that you know really well. And even then, it might be that you one day say something that you believe is funny, and that person that you have known for so long does not find it funny. It's not amused by it at all.
Humor, I would actually go even further than cultural. For me, humor is also extremely based on experiences, personal experiences and realities. And we do not know 100% of a person's experience and realities, the triggers and things like this. And so even the person might not realize they have a trigger on a specific topic. And then when you make the joke, then they realize it and they have been triggered. So
this is so true.
Beyond.
What you said is so true, but also apart from that, there are things that we find funny that aren't really funny until someone tells us, someone corrects us, making sexist remarks.
Yeah.
Without unconscious sexist remarks, making ethnic remarks, religious remarks that are not funny, and people laugh about it until someone tells them, have you thought about what you're laughing about? So it's what you said, experience, etc., plays a major role. But still, humor is something that you cannot always use in diversity and inclusion field.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I had a couple more. What is the strangest, the most interesting question you've been asked by a stranger? Or surprising question you've ever been asked by a stranger?
It will bring me back to emotional literature. The most surprising, most important question is, how do you feel?
Yeah.
At the moment that you might not expect it, or because you said something and that person asks you, how do you feel? It's also something, a question that we often, we tend to respond really out of how we've been raised, how we've been brought up, to say that we're fine when we're not.
Yeah.
It brings me back to emotional literature. And it's, for me, it would then be, at this point, thinking deeper, because you said spontaneous response, right? Spontaneous answer. So the first thing that came into my mind was, how do you feel?
Yeah. Okay, I'll take that one. Thank you. What was your favorite toy growing up?
I'm not sure if you can see this as a toy. My favorite thing growing up were books.
That works for me, I think.
My favorite thing, when we started, I told you about that aunt who's not related by blood, my white aunt, and she would bring me books. I was quite introvert. I hear my sister would sometimes say, I met someone and we were talking, and then we talked about my siblings. And then that person said, I thought there were only three. You were only with three siblings. And she would say, no, we're with four. And they will call the others, but they will not call my name, because I was often reading. Right. I don't have anything else that will come up in my mind right now that was a toy that I like to play with. For me, it were books.
Okay. That's the best type of toy, if you ask me, but...
Yes.
What do you prefer, spontaneity or stability?
Stability. I first say stability, perhaps.
That's why.
You know, I'm a Taurus. I'm a Taurian. Is that the right way to say it? Taurus?
Taurus.
I'm a Taurus. And perhaps it's because of my being a Taurus that I like stability. But it can also be because we came from war to the Netherlands, and that I therefore seek stability in various things.
Mm-hmm.
I also overthink things a lot. Perhaps overthinking is also something of being introvert, I'm not sure. But stability for me, I like spontaneous things, not always. I think stability. It's the first thing that came up. it's the first thing that came up. Stability.
Let's take stability then.
Yes.
And then one last question. So who inspires you on the days where you feel really down and uninspired and motivated? Is there a person, an author, or someone in your surroundings that always somehow manages to bring you up?
There were various people.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, my partner is one of the people that bring me up. So my family, people in my family that bring me up always, my siblings. And it depends on what I'm feeling at that moment. And what that person said to me back somewhere in the past that triggers me thinking of that person and me feeling better, lifting me up at that moment. It can be my partner who always believes in me. So when I feel like, oh, I need to stop or doing a particular thing in my work, I think, okay, I need to proceed. I need to keep going on. And also my son, of course, because he was a choice.
Yeah.
He was a deliberate choice. Having this family was a deliberate choice. So they're also the ones that are inspiring me to move on. I know why I'm doing what I'm doing. And then also, of course, my siblings, my relatives. I my siblings, for me, they are really funny. We talked about humor. for me, they are funny. We understand each other's humor. So when I feel down, I think about something that they said, something that they experienced, something that we did in the past as children or even while growing up. And it helps me to feel better in the moment. And sometimes it can be an experience that I had with a random person that will help me feel better. But I would say it's family. It's really close by. It's family.
Thank you so much. I realize these gut questions, like I call them, are very difficult for you as a researcher. You never, you know, you have to think about things a lot. So thank you so much for your wisdom, sharing your story with us and being with me on the podcast. I absolutely enjoyed it. And I hope you did too.
I really enjoyed it. You know, the thing is, and I come back to communication is everything. And everything is communication. When we speak to other people, it triggers our thinking. It trains our thinking. And next to that, I just really enjoy having conversations. Even though I'm introvert in some ways, I enjoy having these conversations.
Well, same here. And actually, the objective of this podcast is to trigger people's thinking and open up and get out of their bubbles and understand other people's lives and realities and experiences. So, and all that, hopefully to help build a kinder world where people are more open-minded and accepting of each other. So thank you so much, Audrey.
I really
appreciate you and your time. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And thank you also for having me on your podcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe and recommend our podcast to your friends. You can also leave a review or a rating. We'll appreciate that. Do you have a great story to share that can help others in their own journey? Then get in touch via Instagram or by visiting our chroniclesofus.org website and email us. Thanks again, stay curious, and until next time.